Good morning, everyone. Eric Perez, CEO, Queensland Seafood Industry Association, welcoming you all back to a 2019 that has started with a lot of issues for industry around the country. And the one I'd like to talk to today is around mental health and stress. And to that end, we have Dr. Tanya King. How are you, Tanya?
I'm well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
No worries. Joining us from Victoria. Now, Tanya is a researcher at Deakin University, as well as being a director at the Women in Seafood Australasia organisation. So that's background in a nutshell there for you, Tanya. But can I start by asking and directing people to have a think about the fact that we, the university, through your leadership of a group of researchers, put out a paper on the mental health and stress of picture of the commercial seafood industry around the country. Can I ask in broad terms how you see the findings from a research perspective?
Well, the report, it's called Sustainable Fishing Families, and you can find it on the FRDC website in their final reports section.
We'll put up a link up to the podcast, great. Tanya. Yep,
great. It was looking at a number of different, like a broad sort of spectrum of health issues in the fishing industry. So physical health and mental health and questions around safety as well. With the understanding that all of those things are linked in together. So physical health, you know, poor physical health can impact on your mental resilience and vice versa. But what the study that we did, which looked at specifically at mental health, the component of it that looked specifically at mental health, was the survey, the national survey. So many of your listeners may have seen the survey come across their desk. Many filled it out, for which we're very, very grateful, because the data from that gave us something which we haven't had to date. And what we've had in the past is broad anecdotal reports of compromised mental health in the fishing community. So largely around mood disorders like anxiety and depression, linked with other kinds of negative behaviours and practices like substance use and abuse, anger issues, sleeplessness, that kind of thing. What the report has done, and where I think it's potentially useful as a tool for those in the fishing industry who are looking to address this issue, is that it provides solid statistics on where fishers in Australia sit in relation to other Australians. And unsurprisingly, I think for many, the results found that the fishing industry was under an abnormally high level of stress. So we measured stress levels, what we kind of generically call stress, using a tool called the K10, which is, it's called a Kessler 10, and that's a well-established tool that's used by the ABS in Australia as well as around the world. And it's a quick measure of what they call psychological distress. That's the term that's used in the tool. And when we looked at those who measured high and very high levels of psychological distress, we found that fishers were twice as likely, had double the rates of high and very high psychological distress than those in the general population. So that for me was probably, you know, one of the most astonishing results from the report. I did expect elevated levels of psychological distress, and that's why we certainly included the K10 test within the survey, as well as a number of other questions around stress and wellbeing. But I must say I wasn't expecting the results to be quite as stark as they were. So, I think, as I said, I think that the report itself gives the fishing industry and those concerned with health and wellbeing in this community a really strong point of leverage with which to, I suppose, start trying to find inroads into improving the mental health of those in the industry.
So based on that summary, and that was excellent, Tanya, thank you. I've got a million questions running around in my head, but we don't have a million hours to go through them, so I'll ask some of the more pertinent ones. So from your perspective in this research field and the literature that you've read, can an ongoing uncertainty about your fishing industry's rules and the way that your industry's manifests itself in stress? Is that, did you find that people worrying about government and how they run the rules of the game impacted their mental health?
Yes, certainly. I think one of the, it's not through this study, but in other psychological studies, livelihood security is a key impactor on mental well-being. So people who are, you know, in any industry at all live there constantly uncertain about whether or not they will have a job to go to the next day, or a house, you know, a roof over their head, their levels of stress tend to be elevated. We did certainly find that insecurity about the future of the fishing industry, whether it be through reforms or changes to regulations, was one of the things that impacted on industry's sense of well-being. We generally grouped these kinds of what we call stressors into a category called modern uncertainties. And these are, this includes things like reforms, and also the threat of reform or the threat of change. So it's not just actual changes that can elevate people's stress levels. It's looking around at the industry and seeing a pattern of reforms in other fisheries that can actually lead people to feel that they are themselves under threat from such reforms, and that can elevate their stress levels as well.
The reason for, and thank you for that. So the reason for asking is, before the reform process hit Queensland, we were seeing what was happening in New South Wales, and that, from the feedback that I had, and this is all anecdotal, but the feedback I had was almost trying to think of the most appropriate way to phrase this, but I'll use the following: shit, what if this happens in Queensland, before anything actually happened in Queensland? And so we've had the reform process now. I don't know if the listeners, hopefully the listeners and yourself and others have been following, but VMS has been one of the big ticket reform issues that has been taking up a lot of people's time and its inclusion in our fleets. And that brought up a lot of questions around personal privacy of information, not wanting to have Big Brother over your shoulder, and you know, having that sense of somebody's watching you all the time. And that, you know, for someone who might be stressed about whether they're going to have a business next year or the year after under a reform process, the last thing you want to be worrying about is, why am I being monitored when I haven't done anything illegal? And that was some of the thinking that was coming out of Queensland until VMS was introduced. And of course, our learned friends in the fisheries management game said, oh, you know, we're not about monitoring individuals. We just want to see where you fish. And, you know, and then the tagline, oh, it's about sustainability and what you're catching and all the rest of it. It fed a lot of lines around why it's important to have elements of the reform, with not much feedback from industry that was taken on board, and then suddenly the reform is there and it's law. So just giving some background to why I asked that question about security of your business, and which leads, I guess, to the next question about commercial fishers working in industry, I guess, not just in Queensland, but anywhere, is Is there a degree of impact from other stakeholder groups that can influence your level of stress or well-being? I know you can use the reform process as one, but we as an industry are constantly challenged by two groups, environmental groups and recreational fishing groups, not individuals, and that's a constant issue for us. There's never a break in the wall. It's always an issue that's ever present, and it never ends.
It's interesting that you say, you used a phrase there, Eric, we've been fed a line about this or that, and that phrasing kind of made me think of the kinds of issues that we're talking about with the fishing industry in a more general sense, and I think that this encapsulates what you're talking about in relation to pressures from other outside stakeholders, like environmental groups and recreational lobby groups. One of the things that we do point to in the report is the role of something called procedural justice. Procedural justice in the academic nerdy game is a broad box of literature that's used to help us understand how people behave when they have particular attitudes of trust or mistrust towards governing agencies.
Sorry to laugh, and again, so that because the listeners can't see us having this conversation, I guess, is the state government up here halfway through their what I use the term so-called reform process actually hired a university group to assess the what do they call it? To assess the way that they collect and interact with industry. Their industry engagement process is halfway through the damn reform process. So that's why that made me laugh, is that industry at the moment is so adamantly anti what this government, let alone the department, is doing, that to run a hey, how are we going with consultation processes in the middle of a reform process speaks volumes to me. And I'd add this for the listeners' understanding, because I think you're aware of it and I'm aware of it because I deal with it every day. But for those that are listening, trust, I think, is an important part of having good mental health. And if you're part of a group of people, and I don't discount, so don't misunderstand me, for those that are listening, that yes, environmental issues, yes, recreational issues, yes, commercial issues, and yes, issues around maintaining the environment are important when you talk about a reform process. But if you're going into that process thinking you've got a gun to your head and you can't trust the people in the room, I don't know if it's reform or if it's something else.
Mm-hmm. Look, the procedural justice research has largely been carried out by psychologists in lab settings and close survey settings, and there's been a lot of work done with tax reform and tax agents, and why it is that people engage in tax fraud, for example, or you know how it is that people behave when they have particular attitudes towards the government, and we know that trust can be broken down very, very quickly by certain behaviours, and that it is much more difficult to rebuild. And so if you have an antagonistic relationship with the governing body that, you know, that you're dealing with, even if they make, you know, theoretically a sensible decision or a genuine, you know, offer a genuine olive branch or a genuine kind of attempt to communicate or collaborate, if there is a base there of a low sense of procedural justice or a low trust in government, such attempts can fall on deaf ears or actually be regarded, you know, with hostility. And unfortunately, I think in the fishing industry, as you say, I mean, there's been such a protracted experience of loss and reform and low trust, that it will, there's a huge opportunity here for government to rebuild that trust with the fishing industry. And I think it's commendable that the Queensland government is seeking to rebuild that trust with the fishing industry. But I would urge them, I suppose, to not underestimate the amount of work that would need to be done to rebuild some of those bridges that have been damaged so badly in the past.
Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying. I guess one of the issues that we have as an industry, and I'm assuming it's no different in other states, but I won't say it is exactly the same as up here, is that there is a big demarcation, I guess, between government as in the politicians and government as in the bureaucracy. Now, fisheries managers have a task to do, whether they personally agree with it or not, they have a job to do, and I think that's generally understood. But it's at times seen that government, from interactions I have with commercial fishermen, so I'm speaking from my perspective only, that those government management agents, whether they're the Boating and Fisheries Patrol or whether they're the fisheries managers sitting in George Street, are an extension of and almost agents of the government for a certain political agenda, and that's been driven and being talked about a lot more now. That does one party support fishing versus another, and it's so high. I'm talking at a different level to what we're having a discussion about now, but what I see some links there in that if you can't trust government, you can't trust the bureaucracy, and you're constantly being told that you need to reform your industry, then that I would think those things add pressure to how you see your industry. I'm only guessing here as a layperson because I'm not a researcher, but it's what I hear all the time, that if government did something different or if management did something different, we might be able to trust their word. That's what I hear on the ground. Whether or not that translates to mental health or stress issues, I don't know, but it's what I hear the fishermen talk about. Now, what if? Now, what if they'd listened more? So I think at the most basic level, people want to be heard, and I think the reform process up here is that we don't think we're being heard.
Certainly, again, back to the procedural justice literature, again, there's a concept which is used within that called voice. And I think it kind of speaks, it's fairly self-explanatory. If people feel that they have been heard, even if the results for them personally are negative, they're much more likely to be accepting of that decision than if they, you know, there was a better result and they felt like they'd been rode roughshod over or they hadn't been, you know, consulted effectively. I think that's fairly common sense for most people, really. Everybody just wants to be heard. And I think, a lot of that comes back to, again, what we're terming modern uncertainties. So it's changes in government, changes in political will, impacts from, you know, different environmental groups. The uncertainty of how particular environmental groups or recreational groups will behave. For example, in Victoria, we've had the fishing industry has been very well supported by the Greens Party, which I believe is not the perception of what's happened in Queensland. But that uncertainty, I think, and the sense that your business capability can shift radically due to political winds of change rather than material changes in what's happening in the ocean or what's happening with the habitat or what's happening with the water flows, I think can be very uncomfortable for people and add to a level of lack of control over their livelihood and their capacities. So when we're talking about modern uncertainties, we contrast that with something called traditional risks. And when we've looked at the literature on mental health issues in the fishing industry, there's often an assumption that fishermen can be depressed, for example, I'm putting this very crudely, because of the isolation they experience at sea. So they're, you know, they can be away from their families for long periods of time, like FIFO workers, that kind of thing. What we've found, though, through research, is that this is quite opposite is the case. I mean, whether or not those who enjoy solitude and self-reliance are drawn to fishing, or whether, you know, that is developed as part of being a fisher, is not certain. But certainly, we fishermen say things like, "That's what we signed up for. You know, we enjoy going to sea. It's not the big hardship that, you know, it's sometimes made out to be." We have an awareness that, you know, it can be isolating. We know that the weather can change. We know that the markets can fluctuate. We signed up for this. And it's something that it's the kind of uncertainties that change on the basis of decisions or actions or kind of, you know, weather changes that are outside people's individuals' control. So there's a level of acceptance that can come from that knowledge that, you know, these changes can happen, and it's nobody's trying to shut them down. When the uncertainties are coming from a more of a political sphere, I suppose, that's when people can feel under threat. Okay, and that can certainly impact on their mental health. The other thing I want to mention as well, Eric, is that came out quite strongly in the report is the role of fatigue. So obviously for different industries, different fisheries, it can depend on how long you're out and the kind of time span that you're out for. But fatigue is certainly an issue that emerged in the survey as being something that contributed negatively to the well-being of those who responded. So that contributes both at a physical health level and at a mental health level as well. So certainly there's a huge space there where fatigue can be addressed as a way to enhance health in the industry.
Oh, okay. So probably the last question for this podcast, because I'd like to return to unpacking more of the results from the work in later editions of the podcast. But this one, I ask this for more selfish reasons from an industry association point of view, because this is a question that I'll be asked at least by my board is, what can we do as an association to help, other than to point our members and industry more broadly to help resources? What can we actually do on the ground? And I ask this I'm not trying to be facetious when I ask this. I genuinely want to help, but knowing how to help is the key here. And I was wondering if you had any thoughts that we might be able to share, I guess, amongst the listeners here, and more importantly, to take back at least to my board.
Mm. Look, I think over the last few years, there's been a really astounding increase in the level of discussion about mental health issues in the fishing industry. I don't think there's a fishing family in the country that hasn't been impacted by either severe mental health issues or suicide. And that's the level of seriousness of the issue. And even though it was kind of known like a dirty secret like for a long time, in the last sort of maybe 3 or 4 or 5 years, it's actually being talked about much more candidly. And that is a huge step. And that's a huge step. And I would not underestimate the importance of just making a space for people to talk about and express their thoughts on mental health issues in the industry. It is an issue. You have a report that demonstrates it is a very serious health issue. It is a productive issue. it's an issue for the industry and that impacts on the economic productivity and ongoing resilience of that industry. So it's something that needs to be incorporated into the everyday management and discussion surrounding the various industry events and practices. I think that there's a huge amount that can be done. One of the things that I think is a space for, one of the things where I think industry bodies, representative bodies, can do a lot of work in terms of shaping the discourse around mental health is in identifying and distinguishing between the perceived stresses of for those in the industry. So as you've noted, obviously in Queensland, the reforms have been hugely stressful for people. And I think there is a strong tendency for those in the industry and the, you know, rightfully the industry representatives to come together and talk about those factors that are perceived to be driving the stress and poor mental health of those in the industry. I don't think that that's a problem. I don't think that's a bad thing. Obviously, that's, you know, that as an industry body, that's what you're going to be tasked with doing. What I do think is a problem is when that's the only thing that's talked about. That's the stressors. There's also the symptoms, okay? So you're not going to fix the symptoms of poor mental health by talking about what caused it. Yeah. And it seems kind of counterintuitive because I'm obviously, if you've got a problem, you fix the cause of the problem. And, you know, certainly to an extent that's absolutely true. But if you don't also address the symptoms, if you're not sleeping, if your hair's falling out, if you're drinking too much, if you're fighting with your wife every night you get home, if you can't have a conversation with your kids without getting, you know, cranky, if you're losing weight, if you're putting on weight, if you've got a knot in your stomach all the time, if your heartbeat is going rapidly, if you find yourself getting angry or emotional really, really quickly, these are all symptoms of stress and poor mental health. And these can be addressed in isolation from talking about or thinking about the causes of those stress, that stress. So the idea or the ideal situation is one where you can do both, where you can address both the perceived causes and your personal physical symptoms. If you're not sleeping through the night, then you're not in a great position to be able to address whatever's happening in your fishery, so reform-wise or management-wise. So actually getting support for those actual symptoms of poor mental health is a crucial discussion, I think, that needs to be had at the industry level. And this is where industry representative bodies can take a lead and say, yes, we're going to dedicate time to talking about the reforms or, you know, whatever it is that's impacting your fishery. And we are also going to dedicate time to talking about what you can do to sleep through the night.
Okay, and that segues nicely into work that we've been thinking about doing. So some of the other podcasts that are on the podcast system that we've set up has been myself talking to a doctor from the AMA, for example, that is local here in Brisbane, and he was mentioning the same things you were mentioning about those physical signs that there's something not quite right. Whether you get that addressed through a psychologist, psychiatrist, or a GP, just starting to deal with some of that can get you back to some kind of better mental health status, because the way it was described by a lot of the experts, and I think even yourself in this podcast, is that mental health in some respects is a continuum from good mental health to extremely bad mental health and everything in between, and those things manifest differently. So in previous podcasts and what you've just said then, if you see your mate or a friend or family member self-medicating, that means drinking too much, possibly taking illegal substances, smoking too much, gaining weight, losing weight, not being able to sleep, that one's one that's come up a few times when I've taken calls from fisher folk in Queensland saying, oh, I've had about 2 hours sleep. Now, I sometimes lose sleep because I've got issues at home with one of my kids that sometimes is up early, and I have to be up early, so I understand what it is to lose some sleep now and then. But to get 2 hours a day to function as a normal person is not normal, and that needs to be talked about. So, look, the opening of the discussion, you brought up what is the stigma around talking about how does this impact you physically, not just the causes, is that the two bits of work that someone like me has to wrestle with is how do I have the policy debate and discussion around how do we stop some of the causes, or at least minimize the causes of potential stress for people, versus how do you help the individual on the ground? Because I can say from now till the day that I leave this industry that I have a very big target in sight as to who I blame for some of this the causes of this stress on people that don't deserve it. And it makes me angry to think about that stuff, but that's not helpful in terms of if you've already got a group of people that you care about and respect that are highly stressed, you need to find ways to help them. So it's a beginning discussion point for us, because knowing the best services is often difficult, and I wouldn't want to come out as a rep saying this is the best place to go to, other than to maybe say if you want to have a chat with somebody, you could start somewhere as simple as going to see a GP. If that helps someone to have the conversation, great. But it's always an ongoing question for me, because I'm not an expert, but I want to help.
Look, that segues, Eric, really nicely into another one of the findings. We found that nearly 40% of those who responded to the survey, nearly 40%, that's quite a lot, didn't feel like their GP understood the realities and the real stresses of the fishing industry. Okay, so what we've done as part of the extension process for this report and this project is produce a pamphlet it's really for those in the fishing industry as much as anything else, to and I'll give you a link. You can pop it up on
great.
Your website.
That'd be great.
If you can.
Yep.
We're actually getting the printed properly to be sent out to the primary health networks around the country. But I'd like it to be, once finalised, available for fishers in general, that they can take along to their GP and show them some of the statistics on what it is show them some of the statistics that demonstrate the particular need of those in the fishing industry to receive help around mental health issues. So just some of the basic statistics. So, for example, sorry, I'm just finding the page here. In the past year, 58% of fishers reported fatigue, 55% reported stress, 48% had trouble sleeping, over a quarter had trouble with their memory. 8% of those who responded had panic attacks. That's a huge number. Self-reported stressors, red tape, 91%, access changes, 90%, governance uncertainty, 89%, poor public image, 75%. I'm sure you all know fishers who have had have had poor encounters or negative encounters with members of the public while going about their job. Some have had equipment vandalised. There's not that many people who go to work, as particularly as a primary producer, and have to face abuse from members of the public, or potentially face abuse from members of the public and vandalism. This is an incredibly stressful situation to be working in, and perhaps if fishers are able to take this information with them to their GP and say, look, you know, this Boffin at a university has done this study that says it is really stressful to be a fisher for these reasons. Perhaps it would open a conversation for them to talk about, you know, what they're going through themselves personally and what's happening in their family. So, yeah, we'll make that available for your listeners.
Yeah, please send me the link to that. And I've got the link to your paper, which I'll put up, because one of the things that we can do on our website as a way to house some of these things and get information out is to just create a sub page on the site that has mental health and stress as a topic area, and we can put the podcast links to information, links to PDFs and so on. And it's a way that we can help to just build materials and draw people's attentions to these things living there.
That would be fantastic.
Yeah, look, so Tanya, thanks again for your time. It's been a really good, fascinating discussion, at least the stuff that you brought up from the research side of things, because it's one thing to suspect something's going wrong. It's quite another to have some research to actually back up the claim that maybe some things aren't going quite right and that we need to be doing something about it, at least in the short term, to try and help as much as we can. So, Tanya, thanks again.
Thank you so much, Eric, and thank you so much for your ongoing support for this project and for mental health issues in the industry in general. It's really gratifying and really encouraging to see an industry body so engaged with this issue for its members.
It's the least that I can do. I wish I could do more on this, and I'm sure that we are going to. So thanks, everyone, for tuning in, and we'll catch you on the next podcast. Thanks again, Tanya.
No worries. See ya.